Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it is random. I'm Kevin.
I'm Lyle.
And we're going to talk about some music today. There's a whole story behind why I wanted to do this today. You know, there's a lot of places we could have gone, but dude, I got to tell you, a couple things happened in the last couple months that kind of changed my musical life forever. All right, bear with me now.
Oh God.
So you ready?
Yeah.
So the first thing is that Verizon came out with an unlimited data plan, all right?
Yep, that's pretty cool.
That was the first thing. It's like, unlimited data, cool. I jumped on it immediately. And the second thing was, because I think Apple Music went with a family plan, Spotify went with a family plan. So I think for like $15 a month, every member of my family gets Spotify. So I have unlimited data and unlimited full access Spotify. So because of that, even when I'm in a situation where I'm not, around a Wi-Fi signal, I'm still listening to music, and it's fantastic.
Well, dude, this is kind of part of that whole digital media revolution, which we are ironically a part of, and those listening are enjoying right now. So yeah. Kind of a little bit meta there. But when, the first big one was Napster, right? And everybody was like, holy cow. Like, now we can grab all the music we want anytime we want for free.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not good for the industry.
Right. I'm stealing it, but hey.
But in a lot of ways, I think it was great for the industry. It was bad for record labels. And it was, I guess, bad for certain artists.
I think it was bad for every artist, really, who was trying to sell records.
No, it wasn't. Because look at where we are now. There was a period where I guess you could have got caught up, and then your music career would have failed because you didn't make any money or whatever.
Yeah, well, if you're one of those bands that has an album and that's your window, there are plenty of bands that have one album that hits, and after that, they're gone because you have your whole life to write your first album. You got a year to write your second. Second album sucks in a lot of cases. So if the Napster window and your record window fell into the same time period, you were screwed.
Right. Totally agree. So there's an issue there, and I feel bad for those people, and I sort of feel bad for Metallica because they got a bad rap because they weren't wrong in what they were saying. It's just that when rich people are like, when super ultra rich people are like, hey, you're taking my money.
Right.
It just comes off really bad. And the
other,
and
it
the
does.
Yeah. And the other thing was it made them all of a sudden they went from the cool, like awesome metal group, like metal gods, to the old fuddy duddies.
And not just that, they became, with that whole thing, became the corporate entity that they always didn't want to be, that they fought against and kind of acted against.
Yeah, but they really weren't, right? It was an act. I mean, I can remember, I forget their bass player's name, the new guy, not Cliff. I guess he's not new anymore. He's probably been with the band longer than Cliff was.
Yeah, no doubt.
Jason Hamstead, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, he did an interview where he was like, people call us sellouts. And he was like, you're right. We sell out everywhere we go, everywhere we play, every time.
You talking about Jason Newsted?
Newsted, that's it, yeah. And I was like, oh, dude, don't say those words. I'm like, don't come off like that. Just, chill out. And Lars went crazy on it. And actually, James Hetfield was on Rogan's podcast about 6 months ago,
right?
And he talked a little bit about this, and he felt like they were kind of treated unfairly because they weren't, and they got kind of sucked into this thing as the face of it, and they didn't really want to do that. They just were believers in the fact that they did this and they deserve to be compensated for it, which they're not wrong. Like, that's 100% correct.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I think the thing that all of them missed, right, and the record labels, everybody, is that this was going to happen anyway.
Right, it was really a wake-up call.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it, guys. You can rail against it all you want. You can sue, 15-year-old girls in their mom's apartment for downloading 50,000 songs or whatever. Go for it. But you're not stopping anything. And remember the whole ad campaign? You wouldn't download a car. Do you know how many people would download a car if they could?
I mean, I know of two.
I mean, dude, I'm not downloading a car. I'm downloading 12.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it never ceases to amaze me. The conservatism, and I'm not talking in a political sense, but the resistance of change aspect of conservatism of companies to their ultimate failure, right? Their ultimate demise. I mean, we did a whole show on this, companies that missed the boat, right?
Right.
And Blockbuster is another perfect example of a company that resisted this change, and then, yeah, they went belly up.
Dude, I was seeing the other day that there are a few Blockbuster stores that remain, mostly in Alaska.
Wow. That makes sense, actually.
Where there's not a whole lot of internet available.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. I always see pictures on Reddit where it's like a picture of a Blockbuster, and it's like, you know, ancient, you know, monument found.
Right.
You know, or saw a dinosaur today, stuff like that. So the point I'm trying to make is, the resistance to that change never stops the change. Like it was already out of the bag, dude. When Napster happened, it was already over. Like digital media had already taken over, even though the sales weren't there yet.
Right.
It was inevitable.
The idea of being able to get music online is amazing.
Not just music, but I mean everything. Like
everything.
I remember visiting the old Wares sites, right, where I could get software and video games for free. And I mean, I'm talking about on dial up, man. I would wait 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
For a game to come down, right? It'd be 3 or 4 hours for a song. You know what I mean?
But we were grateful.
Oh, I was psyched about it. Yeah, I'd set it, you know, at night and go to bed and then wake up in the morning and see where I was.
And when you woke up in the morning, 8 hours later, you were 38%. You were like, all right.
Something like that. I was like, all right, yeah, it's going to be a couple more days and I'm going to have these songs. But it just was too easy. And it's not about money. I would gladly pay money for stuff. For me, it's super convenient. You know, I can't not click that button. Look, I have a very busy lifestyle, right? It's difficult for me to get out and go to the movies or even explore new music and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's just super convenient for me to click a button and go, maybe that movie's good, maybe it's not, but it doesn't matter because I'm not paying for it. You know what I mean? So if it sucks, fine. But it doesn't stop me from buying stuff, like stuff that I really believe in.
Right.
I buy for my kids, you know. It wasn't about money for me. Now it may be for some other people.
I'm sure that it is.
Yeah, it may be, and for various reasons. I've listened to many millennials, much as I hate that term, but just say we don't pay for anything on the internet. We just don't. I don't care what it is. We just don't. Like that's just a fervent belief of theirs, which I get. They want the internet to be free and open, but you don't get great content without some kind of any kind of advancement, technological advancement. You don't get that. You don't get iPhones without money. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
So that's where iTunes stepped in and saved the music industry 100%.
Absolutely.
100%. Like I don't think it's even close. And also, by the way, made themselves a household name and one of the biggest brands on the planet. And now we have all these cool gadgets and all this stuff that all came from music, dude. That all came from iTunes and the iPod. And people forget that.
For me, the first instance of how awesome the future and the immediate future was going to be was at my sister's wedding. My stepfather said, "Hey, you know, I'm first dance with your sister. I want to dance to Mustang Sally." Right. And the DJ's like, "I don't have Mustang Sally." Like 1.5 minutes later, Mustang Sally was playing off of my iPhone.
Right.
And that was like immediate. I was like, "Oh, you don't have it? Here, give me a minute." And the DJ didn't have it. He had still had a flip phone, but I was like, "Here, check this out." And he was like, "This is amazing. My life will change." I'm like, "Well, you got to get your head out of your ass and get off your flip phone." But anyway, that was the immediacy
dragging
of it.
Crates around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I did that for years, carrying crates of albums around. It sucked.
I'm sure you did.
And then carrying crates of CDs around. That sucked just a little bit less.
And what's ironic now is now the biggest DJs are carrying crates of records around again.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And, now, and mixing it in digitally with their iPod stuff.
Now, you know, back in, God, I guess to the late 80s, mid to late 80s, right? I was a club DJ. I was a radio DJ and a club DJ. So Friday, Saturday nights, I was out there. I wasn't beat mixing or anything, but, I do my thing. So anyway, I was making money. And there was a guy across town who was a good friend of mine. You know, we kind of compete with each other a little bit. That dude's still doing it.
Wow. Right?
Yeah. I haven't played a record or any sort of music in a club in, oh, God, 25 years, something like that. And, yeah, this dude's like 67, still playing music on every weekend. I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
Good for you, man. Good for you. Now, maybe he loves it. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you know, it's a social thing, and obviously everybody knows him. The dude's been at the same club literally for 20 years. So if you go there on a Friday night, you know what you're going to expect, you know?
I always feel bad for the dudes at the strip club. Now introducing Sylvana.
Dude, those guys are making mad cash. Don't feel sorry for them.
Do they make a lot of money?
Yeah, the girls have to tip them. Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know they got a cut. That seems messed up.
You know, dude, the thing about it is if the DJ's pissed at you, they can make your life hell.
I guess that's true. Go ahead and throw in a slow jam.
Or just throw on something that's way too loud
or super short.
It skips No, I'm sure that there's a decent relationship there in most cases, but the girls have to tip the dude at the end of the night just because, you know, he hooked him up with, who knows? I've never done that gig. Not that I wouldn't.
It just seems like it's a little bit sad. That's all. But maybe I'm totally wrong. He's surrounded by hot naked chicks all day. Maybe I'm totally misjudging this.
Yeah. Maybe we need to, put an Ask Reddit out there.
I know.
Strip club DJs of Reddit.
I know.
How's life?
Yeah. Yeah. What is that like? Yeah. How much do you make and does it suck?
Dude, you know what? I'm sure there's plenty of drama. It's just like any other friggin' job. There's good points and there's bad points. The good points being, of course, naked chicks walking around.
Right. Yeah, but after a while, and again, we're getting off on one of these tangents, but that's okay. I would guess after a while you become sort of immune is the wrong word, but I guess custom. It just becomes, just kind of like, you know, especially when you get to know the chicks. Some you might really, really like and others you might despise. You know what I mean? So it's probably like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
I'd be willing to put the theory to the test.
Me too. But I'm guessing sort of like people that work on porn shoots, it's just becomes normal to be around hot naked chicks, right?
Dude, I've read a couple things about, you know, what's it like to be on a porn set? And from what I understand, the smells are just awful.
Oh, yeah, horrendous. Yeah, I think there was an Ask Reddit about that, and it was awful.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, because there's all kinds of farts and, all kinds of things happening, just because it's what happens. There's air being pushed in, and, it comes out, So, I'm sure that there's downsides to that, too.
Yeah, if you're not the one banging, being around other people that are banging is kind of gross.
Yeah, you want to be you don't want to be the guy holding the microphone.
Right.
The Philip Seymour Hoffman. In,
yes, right.
In, what was the movie with
Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights, yeah. Man.
Great movie, dude. Great movie. But anyway, back to this whole music thing. You mentioned Spotify, which is sort of the next generation of iTunes, right? It went from pay for music to pay for a service, a cable service, kind of like, took the cable model.
Pandora was in the middle there.
They were the internet radio thing, which I still listen to, by the way. I have a Pandora account and I still listen to it, and it's awesome. It's free and I jam out to it. But it was really interesting for me when the lines blurred between we always had talk radio and radio, right? So there was those two things. And I guess comedy was in there too, but that's sort of talk radio.
Yeah.
The lines kind of all blurred because they all became part of one platform on iTunes.
Yeah.
Right. Now, you had your podcast, you had your news segments, you had all your music, you had videos. Now it's movies and TV. Like, it just all merged into one spot. And then they came out with the Apple TV, and it's like, Jesus, now it's on my TV.
Right.
Right. It's everything. It's every form of media that you could want on one device, on one service. It's almost a monopoly, dude. I mean, I get there are other services out there, but are there really? I mean, I guess Spotify's doing okay, but I'm pretty sure Spotify, iTunes is crushing.
Spotify's really in its infancy, dude. I mean,
it is.
They don't have video yet. I mean, they just recently started putting podcasts on there. And that's one of the things I'm investigating on literally on a daily basis of how to get us on Spotify.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
It's not easy, dude.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting that these services cropped. I mean, there's a couple other ones too. That I can't remember off the top of my head, but iTunes, the iTunes plan and Spotify are the big ones right now. And it's interesting to me how many people are willing to pay a monthly service for uninterrupted music, just whatever they want, right?
Well, you know, and it's not a matter of uninterrupted. It's, you know, the other day I had, for some god-awful reason, I had the Humpty Dance running around in my head. And the only way I can get rid of things like that is to actually listen to it, you know? So, you know, I was like, okay, fine. So I just typed in the Humpty Dance and boom, I'm listening to it. It's great like that.
It's super convenient.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know, I haven't listened to, you know, Elvis Costello in a while. Let's see what's going on there. And I'll shuffle all of Elvis's stuff for an afternoon. That's the kind of thing where I don't want to buy those albums because, I'm not going to listen to Elvis every week. But if I buy it, I feel as though I have to. But if I can just stream it when I want it, dude, I mean, how awesome is that?
It's pretty incredible, dude.
Now, you know, Pandora was like, you know, say, okay, you put Elvis in and you make an Elvis channel, and every seventh song may be an Elvis song, but the rest of the time you're going to be getting, you know, other 80s, you know, punk, you know, guys that are Elvis-ish, you know. So, but with Spotify,
But that's why they had the thumbs up, thumbs down system. So you crash it.
After a while, it brings it to you. But dude, Spotify is just right on the nose. Bang! Give me Elvis Costello all the time. Well, no skips.
You're paying for it too. Whereas Pandora is free. You can use Pandora. That's true. I mean, you can use Spotify free too. They throw ads in there and all kinds of other crap. At least you used to be able to. I don't know. I haven't used it in a while.
Well, you can, but you can't say I want this song. You can kind of
right. Then it's like Pandora then. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you can say I want to hear this album, but you have to shuffle it. You can't listen to it in order. Or
right.
You know, there's restrictions.
Yeah.
Now, if you're on a laptop or a desktop, those restrictions are fewer. But dude, literally for $15 a month. Everybody in my family has streaming music at their fingertips, and it's, you know, along with the unlimited data. It's like, come on,
pretty incredible, dude. But here's the thing that's probably going to shock you. This whole new wave of entertainment that came through kind of made me hate music. Now, I don't mean hate, and I don't want to. At the risk of sounding like an old fuddy-duddy.
Oh,
I really don't,
for that, dude.
I really don't like anything new that comes out because I'm not exposed to it. Because I would say 99% of the time, I'm listening to a podcast or an audiobook because I find that more interesting. It's not that I don't like Led Zeppelin. I love them.
Right.
Right? But if it's a choice between Led Zeppelin and a new Sam Harris podcast, I'm listening to Sam Harris. Like, and weeks go by that where I haven't listened to music at all. And it's crazy to me because I used to be a hardcore concert goer, wildly into music when I was younger.
Sure.
Right? I could probably still recite NWA lyrics to you today that I haven't listened to in 10 years. I just loved it, man. I loved all kinds of music except for country. I could never get into country, but Wheeler Walker Jr. is pulling me back in, man. There are a few people that come out with stuff. Little Dickie's another one. He's at Firefly right now, by the way.
Yeah.
My wife and daughter go to the Firefly Music Festival here in Delaware every year. And
it's happening right now, right?
They're there right now. Today was the first day.
No, they glamp there, right? They're doing the glamorous camping action.
They rent an RV, dude, and they park down there in an RV. Yeah, it's like 15 of them go. They bunk up. They have a ridiculous setup. Like, cause every RV spot has like a decent amount of area, so you get sort of like a lawn.
Right.
They park on the infield at Dover Downs.
Right.
So that's a racetrack for those of you guys who don't know, and it's the infield of the racetrack, so it's like grass and stuff.
And the racetrack's a mile, so it's a large area of grass.
It's huge. So they park in there and they literally set up tents. They have a giant blow up pool that they set up and
nice.
Yeah. So they're not even glamping. They literally have a house and, you know, a little pool and copious amount of alcohol.
Oh,
there
sure.
may or may not be some marijuana involved
at a festival. Are you kidding? Come on.
You know, they have grills and stuff. Like, it's ridiculous, man. They take all this stuff. The camper has a TV and it's air conditioned and yeah, so they're not suffering at all.
Yeah.
But back to what I was saying, like, you know, the country music was really the only thing that I couldn't get into. Old school stuff I could rock, like old school Hank Williams and stuff.
Right.
But anything really from the 90s on was just horrendous to me. And I get there are a lot of fans out there, but I just don't like it.
Well, from 1981 through mid-1983, dude, I was playing that stuff on the radio.
I bet you were.
I was. My first radio job was the radio station in Milford, Delaware, and it was WAFL Country. The Country King, in fact. So yeah, I was playing Hank and Conway Twitty and Dolly and Kenny, and I was playing all those people.
See, I can get next to that.
It's like any other type of music. Some of it's good and some of it's bad, you know, and all of it makes it onto the radio at some point. So, you know, I loved Hank because, you know, even old Hank, even Hank's dad, Hank.
That's who I was talking about.
Okay, got gotcha. You know, had an appeal. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
And Hank Jr. and some of those guys, you know, Waylon and Willie, they were doing like the outlaw country. You know, that was absolutely palatable.
Right. I get next to that. But really for me, it was super hard rock, like just metal.
Right.
You know, Slayer and old school Pantera. Metallica used to be really hard. Pantera, hell yeah. Or gangster rap. It seemed like polar opposites, but I love both of them.
Well, they're both extremes, so, you know.
I guess so, yeah. That stuff that really, like, you know, but it wasn't limited to that. I love classic rock, too. I loved R&B. Dude, Marvin Gaye, good God.
Yeah, all the old Motown stuff.
Damn right, man. So good. What was that other dude?
That other Al Green? Dude.
Al Green?
Is that Al Green, yeah. Let's stay together.
Sick stuff, dude. Sick stuff, man. But, you know, really since podcasts have kind of taken over my life, probably for the last decade, I just don't listen to it that much anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't. If one of my favorite bands were to come out with an album, I would totally buy it and listen to it, but just not that much. I just wouldn't. There is too much information out, and I'm an information junkie. Like, really, that's... I'm addicted to... articles and not necessarily even the news or something. The news sucks. It's always like awful.
It does.
But just any kind of information I can get. If I'm not listening to a podcast, I'm reading Reddit. So it's really dominated my entertainment. In fact, oftentimes I'll opt out of a movie or a TV show, even something good like House of Cards, right? So I can finish an episode of a podcast. You know, with a professor from some random university talking about, you know, jihadism or, you know, campus protests or whatever it is. So it's really cut into my music. And Jess will come up to me, my wife will come up to me and go, hey, did you hear this new song from this? And I'm like, ugh, you know, it's awful. And it's probably good, but yeah. I just don't tolerate it anymore. And I know that you're not super into podcasts like I am, but it's got to cut in a little bit, right?
It does. And you know, the thing is that, you know, being a child of, you know, of the 70s, really, you know, the first, my first I was making a point of this, you know, thinking, okay, well, we're going to talk about music tonight. One of the things, when did you first become musically aware? When did you, you know, when do you remember back and go, I remember listening to that song on the radio?
So it wasn't a song on the radio. It was my parents had, obviously they had a record collection, right? You're talking early 1980s. I was probably four.
Okay.
And my favorite song in the world was Freebird. Favorite song in the world.
Right.
So good old Lynyrd Skynyrd, man. And
see the, go ahead.
I remember them playing it, and I would make them play it over and over and over again, and I would dance like in the living room.
Now, would this be the live version or the studio version?
I have no idea, dude. It was, you're talking about 1980? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no idea. But
dude,
I,
you were
I have
four
vivid
in 1980?
Good I God. Was. Yeah, I was 4 years old. Yeah, and there are people listening to us going, damn, he's old. But yeah, I was 4 years old in 1980.
Yeah, but guess what? I was 17 years old in 1980.
That's right. Kevin's 13 years older than me. But yeah, dude. And so at that point, and my parents were, my mother was a child of the 70s. My father was a child of the 60s. So they were like wildly into music, obviously.
Sure.
And it was all the rock and roll. So it was like Rolling Stones, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Zeppelin, the Beatles, Mamas and the Papas, Janis Joplin, like, you know, Jimi Hendrix, you know, just everybody, basically Woodstock. Right.
Right.
So all of Woodstock and anybody who came out a little bit after that, like maybe Motley Crue or something. But for the most part, it was classic rock, which back then was just called rock.
Right. There wasn't classic rock. Classic rock happened like in the like mid to late 80s.
Right. That they started, you know, yeah. WMMR, classic rock.
Yeah. Joe Bonadonna.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah. So thinking back, and I remember. My parents obviously were, you know, it was the 60s. I was born in 63. Yes, that's how old I am. So, when
Kevin
I
was
kid,
alive when Kennedy was shot.
I was but a babe, but I was in when the Beatles came over too.
Wow.
How about that? So, my parents were, you know, my father was a big Zeppelin guy. My mother was more, you know, light rock, like John Denver type stuff, but.
Is that even, that can't even considered rock. John Denver's not rock.
Well, kind of was at the time.
It's like, that's elevator music, dude. That's not rock.
It is now.
It's so funny.
I don't know, dude. I heard in the Acme the other day, I heard I'm Coming Home by Motley Crue done by his grocery store music. It was awful. I was like, good God, has it come to that? Anyway. So I remember my parents, you know, going to when we went to Rehoboth Beach. It's a beach in Delaware, resort town. And on the boardwalk, there was a guy who was probably considered a hippie at the time, with long hair and a beard and stuff, selling bootleg 8-track tapes. All right.
Wow.
And, yeah. And my parents were like, "Oh, cool." And my father bought like a CCR and a Zeppelin II and stuff like that. So you know, I remember listening to CCR when I was a kid. In fact, you know, like. I don't know, 15 or so years ago, I was like, I remember playing these guys, you know, listening to these guys when I was younger, and putting on like a greatest hits album, and I knew the words to all of it, and I had no idea. Great stuff.
Right. Yeah,
anyway,
man.
So my earliest musical memory is being in the car with my mother driving to a birthday party for some kid, I don't know, but hearing I Just Want to Celebrate by Rare Earth on the radio.
Nice.
And thinking, wow, that song is really awesome. And it was such a thing of, you know, summertime, you know, the windows down, going to a pool party, you know, at a hotel somewhere, I don't know, and hearing, you know, Rare Earth. And if you don't know that song, you know, that's get it on Spotify. But it's a great song, great radio song, great rock song from, I think, 1969. So I was probably 6 or 7 when that happened. Now, radio ratings basically give credit to people who are 12 and older. Like, you're supposed to become musically aware at around 12. But I think that's kind of late nowadays, man. I think
that's BS.
Yeah, I think it's so much earlier. And I think it usually is. But, you know, in a lot of cases, kids maybe start making their own choices at around 12 to what music they're going to listen to. Before that, it's their parents. So I guess it kind of makes sense to get a 12-year-old and older's perspective as opposed to just, you know, whatever their parents are listening to.
No, man. None of the kids, they're acting up some stuff. No, man. Syracuse. They played, you know, YouTube videos with the same songs over and over again and dance. And so, and that, like, my nephew's five. You know? But I think the other phenomenon, too, Kevin, that we have to address is, it's a broader topic that I do want to get into, but it's the fact that basically anybody can be a musician now. Just, you don't need the record labels, you don't need promotion in the traditional sense, right? Because you have things like YouTube, and it doesn't cost much to create an album now.
Right, you can do it on your own.
Record Junior, I think, spent, I think it was $5,000, I think you said.
Who was this?
It might have been 10. Rita Record Junior. Mm-hmm. It might have been 10,000 to produce his album, his first album. And he did it in a studio. And then, like, had actual copies made and stuff to hand out to people and stuff. Like, that was all included. He went to a studio to do it.
Yeah.
Like, that seems, in, like, amazingly cheap for the return on investment, certainly, that he got.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was pretty much out of the business, and in this album, and the way he did it, drug him back in.
Well, you know, he's a comedian, and he was just a huge fan of country music, and he's always been a musician, too, but literally lived in Nashville, all that kind of stuff, but he decided that he thinks that country music started the second, so he decided to put an album and do whatever he wanted, and he didn't want anybody influencing it, so he could say whatever he wanted on it.
Right.
He pitched it to a couple people, and they just laughed at him. They were like, no, you can't talk about sucking dick and kicking ass. Like, you can't on an album.
Well, at first he starts talking about, you know.
Eating pussy and kicking ass.
Eating pussy and kicking ass, yeah.
Yeah, but
Did you see in the video, I guess, where his bandmates is kind of like, when he gets to the sucking dick part, just kind of looks at him like, I didn't sign on for that, dude. What are we talking about?
Well,
I can't sing backup on that part. Sorry, bro.
He was just on Rogan talking about how funny it is where he plays these, you know, pretty big venues, and there's these burly country dudes with their, you know, their cowboy hats on and their boots on and, you know, cut off shirts and, you know, drinking Budweiser out of the can and singing right along, sucking dick. so good. It's freaking hilarious. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that, like, anybody can be an artist now. Like, I mean, look, we do it, right? The two schleps from Delaware speak about stuff, and somebody listens. So, you know, I think that's the other thing that the record companies missed out on, creating a different model. They could have done that in the beginning. They could have created a cheaper, different model for people. Something like a YouTube or, you know, some other thing like that for artists that maybe didn't have what it took to be, you know, record label material, but, you know, we'll give you a shot for...
Yeah, the minor leagues.
Right, exactly. They totally whiffed there, too. And, I mean, just look how big Justin Bieber is. They was discovered on YouTube. I mean,
yeah, that's the thing, yeah. is that some of these, you know, all of them really are companies that are big, big media, big entertainment companies really in a lot of ways can't see the forest for the trees. You know, this is the way we've done business. We're successful and we're going to do business because we're doing business. And it takes somebody like, you know, a young startup, a couple people in a garage that changed the world with, you know, like out of a dorm room. You got the Facebook guy, Zuckerberg,
yeah,
you know, all of us. I mean, he's one of the richest dudes on the planet, one of the most influential guys there is, you know, 20 years later from a silly little, you know, chat tool that he created at Harvard, you know?
Yep.
So,
yeah, man.
I mean that, those opportunities were there for these, you know, mega big companies to do these things, but they didn't have those ideas.
They're so averse to risk, dude, that, It really does limit their ability to, because they're going to make money no matter what. The thing that they don't want to do is lose money,
right?
You know, that's what looks bad. So they really can't take risks, and I think it's a very limiting thing for big corporations, and an interesting development, because while innovation used to take place, of course, it always has throughout human history, it is taking place at such a fast rate now.
Yeah.
That you can barely keep up with it. I mean, just myself throughout my career, the internet industry, I'm a software engineer for those of you who don't know, the internet industry has changed so much. The tools that I use change so much. And it's everything I can do to keep up with it.
Well, you know, I was talking to my son, James, about this. As he's 15. He's starting to think about what he might want to do with life. And he's like, well, you're a web designer, right? I'm like, no, dude. The thing is, I've been, I kind of left the design part of it, the software engineering part of it, went into the marketing part of it 5 years ago. There was an opportunity to make a few more dollars, et cetera. So I kind of left, you know, coding and front-end development behind and went to digital marketing aspect of it. So 5 years out of the game, I'm a dinosaur. There's no way in hell I could sit down and code anything.
You pretty much are, dude.
Yeah. I mean, it would take so long to catch back up. It'd be like I was starting fresh.
It really is that way. And, you know, what's really funny is I'm interviewing for people for a job right now. And I work for PayPal. For those of you who don't know, I'm a software engineer at PayPal. And I'm interviewing people. And these people have master's degrees in computer science, right?
Right.
I have a couple of associate's degrees
in
electronic engineering. Right. I mean, it's crazy to me that even with the knowledge that I know now, I wouldn't qualify for my position without my experience.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I just wouldn't. They wouldn't even give me an interview, you know. So it's crazy. And I'm interviewing these people. And, you know, they're super advanced. And some of them don't pass. You know, so it's crazy to me that you know, let's see, how many years has it been? Well, it's 2017, so I guess I've been doing this almost 20 years. So in 20 years, it went from dude who was still in college studying nothing related to web development to need a master's degree, and oh, by the way, you still might not get hired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I went to apply at the bank for the contractor job where you and I met, yep. All I had was I clutched in my hand a webmaster certificate from University of Delaware. I took some evening classes, learned HTML, got a job doing that, and then I took that experience and went and got a better paying one. And dude, I basically taught myself all of it. As
yeah,
did you.
Me too. So, well, they didn't have classes when I started doing it. There might have been something I think I did look into one. It might have been UAD, but I was already beyond that.
Yeah.
I got hired when I was still in college, dude. You remember?
Yeah, it's a scarecrow thing though. You may have the knowledge, but unless you have a piece of paper saying you do, you know,
They hired me. And it was crazy. And I used to have to I had to switch to night classes, obviously, because I was working at the bank, as we called it here. So I would have to leave the bank and go to my night classes still in my suit, right? Because Kevin and I worked at a job, believe it or not, where we were required to wear a suit every day.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Suit and tie. And you weren't supposed to leave your desk without your jacket on. It was crazy, conservative, strict, like, dress code.
Somehow we thrived.
Yeah, and I still had, like, I don't know, a year and a half before I graduated. It was a while, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're way off topic here.
We're talking about web design and coding.
Well, I just think the rate of change, right? The rate of pace of change is so dramatic now that literally the most powerful companies in the world can't even keep up with it.
As opposed to innovate themselves, is they let other people innovate and
they buy them.
Company. Yeah, that, yep. That's easier. Now, it can
it's probably
bite you.
Smarter too, because they don't. Well, it's probably smarter because you don't inherit a lot of risk now.
Well,
we talked
about
Time
Warner
about
before, that bought AOL.
Buying AOL.
That
yep, I know. I was just about to say that. That's crazy. So it does happen, but the other thing that they run the risk of though is, if they're late to the game, a company like Spotify doesn't need your money anymore. They're like, no, we're good.
Yeah.
You know, like a company like Twitter, there was a lot of people talking about Twitter being bought by somebody. Yeah, they don't need your money anymore. You know, Twitter's good. I don't know, 7 billion users.
Yeah, well, I don't think they've turned a profit yet. That's okay. You know,
it doesn't matter.
They're making their money.
It doesn't matter. It's the one of the biggest platforms in the world.
It is.
So, it doesn't matter. It's crazy to think that they haven't turned a profit. It's ridiculous. But anyway, the point is...
Well, hang on. What were you talking about? That you want to hear something really weird?
Go.
Apple didn't pay any dividends to their shareholders until 2012.
Wow. Didn't their stock just hit 1,000?
Yeah, but they didn't pay out.
Good God. Well,
I'm sure when they paid, they paid well, but they went like 25 years without paying any dividends.
Hey, man. You know, it's crazy to me how they kept up with this pace and in a lot of ways innovated that pace in a space where everything was unknown, right? They were a computer company, you know, and they were really the first company that went, you know what, let's start doing other stuff. I mean, you had Sony, who was in the movie industry, like they had a lot of...
But they weren't a computer company.
Right. You know, Microsoft was out there too, but they were pretty much just software, and they still are pretty much just software. They have the Surface tablets, they have the Xbox, but their bread and butter is Windows and, you know, Office and stuff like that.
Right. Minecraft.
Now they own Minecraft. Again, another perfect example. And by the way, brilliant decision to buy them.
Oh, yeah.
Mojang.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think... You know, when you can have younger, I mean, my cousin's an artist, right? And he's a bass player for a band called Scar the Martyr, and on tour, I think they're on tour now. And you know, without this revolution, I don't think he would have had as good a shot. Now who knows? He grew up in L.A., so you know, maybe, but. There's just so much more music out there now than there ever really was, I think. I don't think I can think of a time where there was this much new stuff coming out every day. It's almost as if, like, every week I'm hearing about something new. And again, I might be out of the game, but I don't think I'm off by that much, man.
Well, I can't speak for you. I mean, you don't listen to a lot of stuff. Admittedly, you're a podcast guy. And, you know, I'll listen to podcasts and things here and there. But, you know, sometimes I just want music because it drives me. And, you know, I don't have to put my full brain on it like I want to do a podcast. So, you know, if I'm trying to grind through some work, then I'll put music on. So, you know, the great thing about Spotify is, you know, you can... You know, they have playlists for you that is really genre specific. So because, you know, I was such a rock guy and a classic rock guy, the current state of popular music for me is just awful, because I'm not going to say rock is dead. It just morphed into something that I don't really appreciate. I like a few bands that are out there. Rock bands, but for the most part, I'll go looking for I'll go to the Spotify blues genre, and I'll look in there and see if I can find some guys, you know, that are worth listening to. So I've been exposed to all this great new stuff that I would never have thought to go looking for if music hadn't changed out from under me and kind of left me behind. Now I'm 54, so pop music isn't meant for me. It's meant for my kids, and they enjoy the hell out of it. So I have to go look for, you know, like Kenny Wayne Shepherd, you know, who's a blues rock guitarist. So, you know, I dig that guy. And, you know, there's a guy named Ollie Brown, who's really good. Richie Kotzen, guys you've never heard of before that I listen to. And they're great. You know, it's like funky blues, rock guitar. And, you know, and that's where I make my I listen now. So. And, you know, if you want to go check those guys out on Spotify, by all means, they're fantastic. But so, you know, my whole thing with music is that, you know, back in the 90s, early 90s, dude, I was part of what made, you know, I put my playlist into magazines, and record companies were all over me trying to get me to play their music. So I was kind of like in the bleeding edge of this stuff. Now I'm so far behind it, dude. It's the most bizarre thing. I was looking at the Billboard's top 100, and I can honestly say I've not heard any music by most of these guys.
Wow.
Well, there's Bruno Mars. I've heard him. DJ Khaled. I've heard him. Ed Sheeran. I've heard him. Yep. I've never heard a Kendrick Lamar song.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Imagine Dragons. I heard Sam Hunt. I've heard, but like Childish Gambino. Yeah, I've heard some of his, but. French Montana.
You know that's the dude, you know that Childish Gambino is the dude from Community, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, Robbie's a big fan. You know, yeah, Shawn Mendes, he's huge, I guess. I've never heard him. Brett Young, Halsey, Harry Styles. He used to be in a boy band, right? I've never heard anything by him.
Yeah, yes, he was in One Direction.
Yeah, Jason Derulo. I may have seen him on a show at some point, like singing songs. So, but most of these, dude, the Chainsmokers, no idea who these guys are.
Yeah, I've never heard of that either.
Drake? I've never heard a Drake song.
What? Yes, you have. You've definitely heard a Drake song.
Maybe, but not on purpose.
Yeah, you've definitely heard a Drake song. There's no doubt.
Yeah, don't know, dude. My kids don't really listen
for a long time.
My kids don't listen to hip hop, so I don't know.
He was in a Sprite commercial, dude. There's no way you didn't. You didn't hear a Drake song.
Okay, maybe. I guess. Like I said, not on purpose.
That's fair, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Keith Urban, I've heard of. Lady Gaga, I've listened, you know, I've heard things. Like, she was on the Super Bowl, for God's sake.
That's right.
Now, I was looking through here, and I've not heard most of these songs, but I saw Florida Georgia Line featuring the Backstreet Boys.
Nice.
What in the hell's up with that?
I don't know, but it sounds cool.
I guess. I mean, you're just talking about a train wreck. But, you know, my point is that popular music now isn't meant for me, and there's really... I mean, Ed Sheeran is probably the closest thing that approaches, you know, a rock star that's on this list. So, you know, a lot of people my age and older, when, you know, rock music started to morph and go away a little bit, to, you know, for the most part, a lot of those guys went to country. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it.
No, I hear you. That's why I just stuck with the stuff that I like. Like, I still listen to Rage Against the Machine all the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They've been broken up for 20 years now.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. I listened to Blood Sugar Sex Magik start to finish the other day. I was like, what a great album.
That's a great album, man. Maybe one of the best ever made. You know, I mean, I don't know if it could mess with the Beatles or Zeppelin or anything, but it was up there, dude.
Well,
not a bad song on it.
Right, you know, and... Dude, I was listening the other day to Some Girls by the Rolling Stones. That album was like the soundtrack to an entire year of my life.
Yeah.
You know, so I listened to that start to finish and remember things that I did when I was listening to it before. And it's like those things, I mean, music really, when you get right down to it, it's almost like a smell. Like it brings back a memory. When you hear a song, you can go, you know what, that's dancing, you know, and that dance with that girl, that, you know, it's music really is memories.
There's a phenomenon associated with music that it causes chills. I forget what it's called, but it's actually a bodily physical response to the music, which is pretty incredible when you think about it. Like that, something audio could cause that. But if you hear that really good song, like it will just kind of buzz your back a little bit, and you'll be like, oh wow. But you mentioned bringing back memories. So, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, the CD, it was compact disc back then, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
I think I was 15 or 16 when that album came out.
I think they still sell them, don't they?
I don't know. They probably do, yeah.
Yeah.
They definitely do at Walmart. And my buddy had a Primer Gray, let's just call it what it is, rape van, basically. It's certainly, you wouldn't let your kids get into this van. Like it was just beat up. And,
did he have free candy painted on
the side? No, but there was a mattress in the back of it. There was no seats. It was just a big mattress.
Good God.
And it wasn't used to rape people. But
good. That's good.
You would certainly, if you looked at it, you'd be like, yo, there's no way I'm getting in that thing. And there may or may not have been a party ball that had been converted into a gravity bong in the back of it.
May or may not. It may or may not have been painted blue.
And we rode around in this thing for, I think it was more than a year, and that CD never came out. It just never did. It just was always in there. We never ejected it. And we hung out in that thing all the time, you know, partying and, you know, just hanging out or whatever. Because we had nothing to do in rural Middletown. So yeah, like a full year of that album. There was never a need to pop it, you know?
Well, you know, the thing is, during that year that it came out, there wasn't anything better you could have put in.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, maybe there was stuff worth listening to, but when you're riding around with your friends, I mean, you know, that's a great party album.
Yeah, people forget that the Chili Peppers prior to that were really like an alt band, you know, sort of like skate band, like the Dead Kennedys were.
Like a punk surf band.
Yeah, sure. They were part of that genre. But then when that came out, they went full on mainstream, like Under the Bridge, you know. They went full on mainstream, and since then have been mainstream, and they're still great. But it really was kind of I remember thinking, like, really? The Chili Peppers?
Yeah.
And then being like, wow, okay. Because I had listened to Mother's Milk and stuff. I skateboarded, so, like, I was kind of into that. But, yeah, they crushed it.
That album was 26 years ago.
26 years, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. How you feeling now? And then, of course, the next summer, The Chronic came out. So you had to have that.
No, that didn't leave the CD player a lot either. But there was a lot of good hip hop that came out around then. That was kind of the hip hop revolution. It started in the '80s, you know, and I guess it started slightly prior to that. But really, the '80s is where it kicked in with like Run DMC and LL Cool J and like all them guys, you know, Public Enemy. But really, when The Chronic came out, that's when Gangsta Rap took over. Like N.W.A. was before that, and it was really good. And Ice Cube was releasing stuff that was really good too, but when The Chronic came out, that's when it exploded.
Dude, I made a statement that there was probably nothing better to listen to that summer. I stand corrected. Never Mind by Nirvana was out.
Oh, that's a pretty good one too. Yeah.
Tribe came out with Low End Theory, right?
Oh God, that's a great album too.
Bad Motor Finger by Soundgarden.
Oh God.
Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusion was out there.
Wow, GNR. Right?
And 1 and 2, of course. And, dude, 10 by Pearl Jam.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's so
there was plenty of revolution
that happened was that whole grunge thing.
Right. Yeah, Metallica came out in 91 with Metallica, you know, which was huge.
It was not my favorite album. Really, after Injustice for All, they kind of went downhill for me.
Well, they kind of leaned mainstream. Can't say they ever went mainstream, but, you know. When you have a hit on the radio... you're kind of mainstream, kind of ish.
Yeah. See, I remember the Metallica where they refused to play them on the radio. Even something like One, I would try to get them to play because I used to call radio stations and go, "Yo, play this," and they would never play it.
But dude, they had Enter Sandman, The Unforgiven, and Nothing Else Matters playing on pop radio.
Those are great songs.
They are.
It's just the entire album is not my favorite piece.
Right.
Probably my favorite Metallica album has got to be Master of Puppets, man.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a great album. But all of them before that, like Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, they're Justice for All, they're all great. It's just, you know, for whatever reason, and again, I'm not saying that Enter Sandman stuff, that wasn't a great album. It was good, but it was subpar to me, and everything after that has been just basically unlistenable for me.
Well, you know, the early stuff is that memory thing again, you know?
Yeah, man. I was a young kid skateboarding. Here's this band that came out with this sound that I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, this is just super hardcore. And they used to, every album, they would release an instrumental piece. And I think Orion, which is their best one by far, it's like 15 minutes long or something. I think that was on Master Puppets too.
No,
yeah, it is. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful song. Right. Yeah, it's crazy. And it's full on instrumental. No vocals.
And then, of course, Megadeth, dude. Come on.
Yeah, Megadeth. I mean, I listened to all that stuff. Slayer. I was huge into Slayer. And it wasn't like, you know, metal for all, like Devil. I just liked the music. It was cool.
Dude, by the way, did you see a few days ago that somebody took War Pigs by Black Sabbath and put it with some SpongeBob cartoon video?
No, but I cannot wait to watch it now.
You have to see it. It is freaking brilliant.
I bet it is.
Just search for War Pig SpongeBob, and it's like 4 or 5 minutes, but it's just brilliantly done.
I'm so in. Yeah, I'm pulling it up now so I can watch it as soon as I'm done.
I really wish we could play music and not be charged $1 million per download. Yeah,
well, really can't, so.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
All right, so... Jeez, you know, I could talk music all day, but let's continue. What the hell?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not busy. So let's talk concerts a bit. My very first concert. So my parents went to Live Aid, which was kind of cool. They always did stuff like that. Like we did Hands Across America. Remember
I thought
that?
They looked familiar.
But my very first concert, I was probably, I don't know, I'd have to look it up. I was young though. I don't know, 7, 8, 9, something like that, was the Michael Jackson Victory Tour.
Right.
And I actually saw, and it was at JFK Stadium in Philly, which doesn't exist anymore.
That's true, it doesn't.
And I'll never forget them doing Thriller on stage. That was ridiculous, right?
Well, that was the Jacksons had the Victory Tour, so correct. It wasn't just Michael, it was all of them.
It was all of them, right.
Yeah.
But afterwards, Michael Jackson actually, we waited, and he came by in his limo, and I actually high-fived the glove.
No, you did not.
I swear to God, dude. I swear to God. He stuck his hand out. A bunch of people ran up. I bolted for my mom. She had a panic attack, and I did. I high-fived his glove.
Now, you high-fived a glove. Are you 100% sure that Michael's hand was in it?
I'm not, but it was a light-skinned black dude wearing a glove like that in the back of a gigantic limousine surrounded by police cars.
Yeah, the odds are it was Michael's hand.
I mean,
unless he had a stunt hand to hold out the window.
Totally possible. Like he might have left by helicopter right after the, and I just didn't notice. But I mean, I thought it was his hand, and I'm never going to not think that.
Well, dude, that's you've never told me that. That's approaching awesome.
Isn't that a cool story? And
not as good as your Grateful Dead story, but pretty good.
Well, that one's pretty bizarre. I don't know if I should tell that one.
Probably not. My first concert was 1980. I was a junior in high school. You were four. I went to Salisbury, Maryland, to the Wicomico Youth and Civic Center. That's what it was called then. And I saw ZZ Top.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
This was before Eliminator and all that. They were touring LaGrange, I think.
Wow.
Something. Yeah. I mean, and then a year later at the same venue, I saw Ted Nugent when he was touring Cat Scratch Fever album.
Back before he was crazy?
No, he was still crazy, but he just wasn't, you know, visible. Well, dude, he was wearing a loincloth swinging on a rope from speaker stack to speaker stack. So singing Wang Dang Sweet Poontang. So
maybe
yeah,
he was crazy.
Dude was crazy. And then literally 6 days later, I saw Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band right there at the same spot.
Wow.
Polar opposite concerts.
So let me hit you with the rundown. Because I've been to a lot of shows in my life. So did that Michael Jackson one. Saw Bon Jovi after that. Mm-hmm. I was probably 13, and my mom let me take my then 13-year-old girlfriend to a Bon Jovi concert.
Did she drop you at the door and say, make good choices?
No, she went with us, but she was cool enough to buy her seat directly behind ours.
Okay, so she wasn't right up on you.
Right, so she, and that's, like, how cool was that?
Like, that's pretty cool, yeah, that's
all right. Pretty cool. Yeah, but she wasn't going to let us go in there by ourselves.
No.
So that was pretty sick. They played with somebody else, too, but I'll never forget, or I'll never remember who they were. It was a band I didn't know. And then I sort of get into my teenage year. I went and saw The Dead, obviously. I didn't go inside. Saw a lot of crazy stuff outside. That's a story for a different podcast.
Perhaps did some crazy stuff outside.
I did. I 100% did crazy stuff outside. I was 14 years old. Not the best life choice that time. And then when I became an adult, I kind of went to a lot of concerts, man. I saw Soundgarden and Rage Against the Machine at the Electric Factory.
Nice.
I saw Tribe Called Quest, and then the Beastie Boys. I've seen The Roots, Lenny Kravitz, Blues Traveler. I saw one of the coolest concerts I ever went to was the Wu-Tang Clan and Rage Against the Machine. I saw Rage a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And that was
those
pretty
sick. I never saw Rage, but they were awesome.
It was incredible, dude. Yeah, they were really cool. I've seen Korn and Tool several times, Metallica several times. You know, the list goes on. And obviously I saw my cousin's band. I've seen Korn. I've been in the room with the members from Korn. Rob Zombie a bunch of times too, because my cousin toured with them. But the probably the coolest show I was ever at, this might shock you, was Ozfest. And the person who played right before Ozzy was Marilyn Manson. And I was not a Marilyn Manson fan. I was not. I just didn't care. I was indifferent.
Right.
But God damn, that was a good show, dude. Like, he was just like an incredible performer. Like, it was an incredible performance, man. I mean, just like all the props and the crazy stuff. And plus, he had two dancers next to him dancing in bikinis.
Right.
To the song Be Obscene. And he just walked up and just dropped this girl's panties. And then pulled her bra off too, her top off too, and then did it to the other one. And their chicks, and they didn't miss a beat, man. They just kept dancing. And it was like, I was like, holy crap, like there's two full on naked chicks right in front of me. And dude, they weren't not hot. I was like, this is kind of incredible. Yeah. So dude, I probably can't even name them all. I've been to a lot of shows. And I'm kind of over it, honestly. It's too loud, and I'm always in the pit. Like, I got to have the best seat.
Right.
And last time I was in the pit, it was at one of Kyle's shows, as a matter of fact. And Korn and Rob Zombie played back to back. And it must have been 95 degrees that day. And it just was full of sweaty men, just, you know, with their back sweat, trying to touch my face. And I'm like, all right, dude, I'm out. I got to get out of here. Something I totally would have endured as a young lad. But probably the coolest thing I ever saw at a concert was when I saw Korn for the first time. They played during the day at Lollapalooza. And they came out on stage on full chrome bicycles. And then Jonathan Davis walked out in his kilt and he was playing his bagpipe. And he was like, oh, this is cool. And when they started playing, I turned around and looked. And it had been particularly dry that summer. And I looked and... you know, I was in the pit, so that there's like a grassy field behind that where like the general admission people are. And it was a dust cloud, dude. You could not see a thing.
Huh.
Because people were like moshing. And it's just that entire air. I mean, you're talking about like two football fields was a brown cloud. Yeah, pretty awesome.
Nice.
And I remember being really thankful that I was in the pit area where only about 100 seats were sold.
So you want to hear about my concert going live?
Let's do it. Do it, man.
All right. So I told you the first couple, but being a guy that was in radio and had some relationships with record companies over a span of 4 or 5 years, dude, I saw shows and not just saw them, but, you know, sometimes I had front row, sometimes I had backstage. You know, so me and some radio listeners that I took met Springsteen and Patty.
Wow.
Backstage, that was cool.
Wow, that's really cool.
Got backstage at a Billy Joel concert when he was married to Christy Brinkley and saw just how short he was, how tall she was, and how drop-dead good-looking she was.
Oh, didn't she was actually a hottie, meet because,
huh?
She was a hottie, dude.
Oh, absolutely. She's still a hottie, for God's sake. So, we were supposed to do a meet and greet with Billy, but they were like in a full-fledged, you know, dust-up at the time. So nobody really wanted to approach that. Saw Jimmy Buffett a million times. Always kind of.
Yeah,
like
I saw him too. I forgot to mention that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Kind of like the feel of his concerts. It was a huge party. Kind of dug some of the music. You know, it was good. But the best thing is, I showed up at a concert. I think we had like 17th row, which was good. And then I saw my record company person who was with whatever MCA, I guess, and said, "Hey, you want to sit up front?" I was like, "Well, yeah." And dude, we were literally elbows on the stage.
Wow.
And when the band did "Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw," he came over to us with the microphone, and my wife and I sang into the microphone the chorus.
Oh, you know, that's so cool.
"Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw." And then after the song, he came over and said, "You guys did great," and shook our hands. I've never been to a Buffett concert since.
Wow. Yeah, you pretty much dropped the mic there, man.
That was pretty much it right there.
It's never going to get better than that.
Right. So it was like, I could go, but eh. So, dude, I went to Bon Jovi and got backstage and met those guys. It was pretty cool. There's Aerosmith. Didn't meet those guys, but saw them. Dude, the list of concerts goes on and on. I announced the Romantics on stage at Shippensburg University. That was kind of neat.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
You know, Green Day, just I mention a band, chances are I saw them if they were out there touring in the early 90s.
That's really cool.
Yeah, but really cool. But just like you, dude, I don't even want to go. I don't want to go.
See, Jess was just telling me. By the way, dude, I forgot to tell you that Method Man jumped on my head.
What?
He stage dove at the Rage Against the Machine Wu-Tang concert, and his stomach and his belt buckle actually hurt my forehead.
That's what you get when you're in the pit, man. It happens.
Yeah, I know. That was pretty cool, though. But anyway, yeah, Jess keeps telling me you got it. She's been going to Firefly ever since it started, right? They do this every year.
Right.
And she's like, you got to come one time. Like, we'll figure it out. You know, please come. You'll have so much fun. And I'm like, listen, Jess, there's a million people. I hate people, right? So there's number, strike one, right? There's a bunch of bands that I don't know or care about.
Yeah.
Or strike two. And then strike three is you're going to put me in the middle of a place where I literally can't go home. I'm 25 minutes, 30 minutes from my house, and I can't go home.
Yeah.
No, thank you. No. I'm not staying there for 4 days. Listen, man, I like all the people that are there, but I don't want to live with them for 4 days. Man, I am a quirky mofo. I like my privacy. I was an only child. I like being alone. People find that weird.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy being by myself.
Well, you know what? I wasn't an only child, but I enjoy being by myself if I know that eventually people are going to come home to me.
Yeah, I don't even know that I care that much about that.
Well, it's like, you know, when my kids were younger, my wife would take my kids to her mother's house for the weekend, you know, leaving me to be on my own from, you know, Friday midday to Sunday night. And like Friday night, I'm like, I can do whatever I want. Nobody's going to be blah, blah. Right. So, but with Sunday, I was like, man, when are they going to get here? You know, I miss them. So,
yeah, I mean, I do miss them too, obviously. I mean, I'm not, you know.
Well, it's the same thing with me and Eagles games, dude. I love being there, but I don't like going and I don't like coming home. So if I could just be airlifted into Firefly, right, and just popped into the middle of a crowd and I could have a bare 10-foot circle around me wherever I went. Just if I walked, if I took a step, everybody just would, you know, if I could do that.
Yeah, dude, I don't even like going to the beach, honestly. And I love the ocean and stuff, but people. I'm just not there. I can't deal with it.
I'm with you on that. It's like, you know, we go down to the beach, 4th of July, mm-hmm. Ocean City. The boardwalk is packed. And Marilyn's like, let's go walk down the boardwalk.
Yeah, it's like, you got your Thrasher fries. Okay, yeah, they're good. But you got to wait in a freaking line.
But we're there for a week.
For French fries.
Let's go down there on the day before the 4th.
Right.
You know? Or the day after.
Yeah, and God forbid trying to watch the freaking fireworks from the boardwalk or something.
Last year we watched them from the balcony.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Smart. Yeah, that's amazing.
But, you know, the funny thing is you go down to Rehoboth Beach. We're in Delaware. So you go to Rehoboth Beach, mm-hmm. Like on a Saturday, literally at the end of Rehoboth Boulevard, where people just tend to go onto the beach, there's mm-hmm. no room from the boardwalk to the water.
Yeah.
It is solid, packed full of people.
Yeah, and good luck finding a parking spot.
Yeah, that's true. But, the thing is recently they passed an ordinance in Rehoboth Beach where no, like the 10x10 canopies, uh-huh. you can't do that. No more barbecue grills.
Oh, good.
Right, which is like, wait a minute, you're barbecuing down there?
Of course.
And thirdly, no portable toilets.
People were bringing portable toilets?
People were dropping deuces inside their cabanas.
Well, I mean, you got to go to the bathroom.
Well, yeah, I know, dude, but you know.
At least they're taking it with them.
I don't know. I guess it's better than, you know, go dropping a brown shark in the ocean.
I mean, who wants to use the public ones, honestly?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But still.
Have you been in those public ones at Rehoboth?
I have.
It's pretty gross.
But the thing is, dude, like you're sitting there and you're getting your chill on and all of a sudden you're from the, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like 5 feet from you because it's so jam-packed there.
Well, yeah, that's pretty gross.
Anyway.
I hate those beach
Somehow we went from music to dropping a deuce on the beach in Rehoboth. All right, bitches, we're out. We'll be back in a couple with another engrossing topic of some sort.
Right.
You can guarantee we're going to go off on tangents then, too. So
probably.
Hopefully you enjoyed it, and we'll see you later.
Peace out.
Yeah, right.